Hi there, and welcome to the Homestead Education Podcast. Do you have a homestead, farm, or just dream of a rural life? This is a show to help you and your kids grow your own food and grow as a person. I'm your host, Cody Hanner. I'm a homesteader, homeschool mama six, and small town enthusiast. I was raised by an old school rancher and blessed by the grace of God to have been exposed to so much of what rural life has to offer. Join me every week to talk about homesteading, homeschooling, and growth with a homestead education. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Homestead Education Podcast. Today, I have Dalia Monteroso, and she views herself as the president of Chickenlandia. I am so happy to have you on today. We have been trying to line this up for a while, and I can't wait to hear all about what you're doing.
Yes. So thank you for having me. You know, I do view myself as the president of Chickenlandia, but I will say that I think if my chickens could vote, they would have voted for me.
You know what? I'm going to go with that because, you know, I think my pigs would vote for me because mama always comes out with eggs. So,
yes, there you go. Piglandia.
Yes. So tell us a little bit about yourself, like what you have going on, how you found chickens.
What do I not have going on right now? Well, I am a backyard chicken educator. I've been an educator for a little over 12 years now, I think. Mm-hmm. Never thought this is what I was going to be doing. I did not lie in bed at night as a child and think, oh, I'm going to be a backyard chicken educator when I grow up. I didn't grow up with chickens. I grew up in the suburbs. I grew up very disconnected, total like Gen X kid.
Even I grew up rurally, but I was such like a, Gen X, latchkey, eating mac and cheese kid, you know?
So I just kind of found myself in this chicken world, and I am very passionate about it. I really like to bring people together through chickens. I like to talk about the broader meaning of chicken keeping. And, you know, I've been doing a lot of homeschooling podcasts lately because I realized that there were many homeschoolers that were taking my online course. Have found myself talking to lots of homeschoolers. I have my own homeschooling experience. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Most people know me through my YouTube channel. It's called Welcome to Chickenlandia. That's my biggest platform. Okay. But I'm across social media, and I have also have a podcast called Bawk Talk, BAWKTAWK.
Love it. Taking notes, going to share that.
Thank you.
Now that's awesome. So how did you get started with chickens?
So I'm going to start at the beginning so that everything makes sense. I was living in Los Angeles. I was working as a personal assistant for a little while, and then I worked at Lifetime Television for a little while, and I met who was to become my future husband in Los Angeles, and he is still in the entertainment industry. He's actually an aerial cinematographer, but we were both like, you know, playing that game. I was really trying to become the next great American filmmaker. I wanted to be write and television and movies and all that stuff. And then I fell in love. I got married and we were talking about having children. And I was like, I don't want to have kids in LA. I just, you know, nothing against LA.
I grew up in Northern California. I've got all sorts of things against LA. So,
yeah. I mean, just the traffic alone is just so brutal. You get tired of it after being there for a while. So we moved to Bellingham, Washington. And I had a little baby boy. He was about 18 months old. And I found myself just really kind of mourning the loss of this dream that I had had. And also, I felt that I didn't have my own kind of identity. Like I was a mother. I loved being a mother. I was a wife. I love being a wife. I love my life. I was glad that I made the decision that I made, but that still didn't like stop that feeling of that loss. And the other thing, and I always talk about this because I feel like we don't talk about it enough, but I was suffering from postpartum depression. And I had postpartum depression for years, actually.
Oh, my whole business stemmed from a horrible bout of postpartum depression, but my postpartum anxiety, I'm just now starting to feel like I have control over. And he turned 4 last week, so.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people don't realize that it can last that long. It's not something that is, oh, you know, 3 months and it goes away. For some people, it does. But for me, it really
was. And he was number 6, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. For me, it really was a long, you know, I suffered for a long time. And I also didn't know that that's what was happening. And my husband didn't know that that's what was happening, because as mothers, we just like, we will just plow through and appear a certain way.
You assume that you're just exhausted.
Yes. Yeah. Like, oh, you know, this is what being a mother is like, you know? So that's where I was. And I said to myself, I'm going to get some chickens. And that was the beginning. Yeah. It was like this weird kind of like rite of passage where I just decided this is what I was going to do. It was like kind of the moment where I was like, okay, I'm really going to grow up now, you know?
I think the first time I felt that way with chickens was when I went from like, I made the conscious choice to order 6 chicks and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then a year later, somebody was like, we're getting rid of our whole flock. And I turned to my husband. I'm like, can we do that? And he was like, why couldn't we? It would just be extra chickens. And I was like, but everybody says you have to be responsible. And that's not responsible. And he's like, get in the car. Well, let's go get the chickens. And that was that first moment where I'm like, I'm a big girl and I can do whatever I want.
Yeah. There you go. That's the chicken math. Chicken math in action. So yeah, I call it divine intervention. I mean, I went and I got my baby chicks, and the moment that I was putting my baby chicks in the brooder for the first time, that was really, I think, the second time I had ever held a baby chick. I just my heart opened in that moment, and a new dream came in. And I became so incredibly passionate about these animals that, you know, my friends and family were like, oh my goodness, like she's really gone off the deep end. And I posted something
about that on Instagram this week. Like, what homestead thing do you do makes people question your sanity?
Yes. people started coming to me and asking me questions and stuff. And then the local community college asked me to teach a class, and I had chickens for 6 months, but I did not say that. I didn't mention that. I just said yes. So I taught that class. And when I was done, you know, I did a lot of research and everything. When I was done teaching the class, a woman came up to me and she said, I've had chickens for 30 years and I learned more today than I ever knew.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And that was it for me. And even like after that, when I started, I did a TEDx talk. It's called I Dream of Chickens.
I'm going to have to go check that one out.
And then I eventually had my YouTube channel, but I was still kind of like on a national scale or an international scale, I was like, I just want to entertain people about chickens. I just wanted to be an entertainer and do the education stuff locally. But I just kept getting people asking me questions and wanting to learn from me and wanting to. Wow. And finally, I was working. I had like somebody that I was consulting with about my YouTube channel at the time. And he was like, this is happening. You just need to lean in. You need to become an educator on a bigger scale. Like, this is what you're meant to do. It's very obvious. And so I just said, okay. And from that moment on, it's just kind of been like this boulder rolling down a hill that I can't stop. And I do love it. You know, it's, I'm not producing Hollywood movies, which is fine. I'm probably a lot happier doing what I do now. So yeah, it's just all about chickens all the time over here.
It's one of those things. Like I had a college professor who was like, "You're in the wrong major. Like you need to be focusing on ag. That's your thing, you know." And because everything I wrote about was agriculture while I'm majoring in business.
There you go.
And he's like, "Nope, this is the wrong major for you." And so like every time when I graduated from, an ag school, when I got my first ag job, when I got my first speaking gig in ag, I send him a gift basket.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because I grew up in ag. I just never thought that you could do something with it other than be a farmer.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, it's interesting when the things that we grow up with kind of come back to us, you know, like the things that we reject. For example, you mentioned mac and cheese, you know, growing up with mac and cheese. And like, that's all I wanted as a kid, but I had like all this homemade Guatemalan food and I didn't want that. I wanted the mac and cheese, and now all I want is the Guatemalan food that my mom used
Right.
to make.
Well, it's like I live in this world where like all the moms are supposed to be super crunchy. And I'm like, and even our journey is a lot about food. And I still have those days. Like I went down to our grocery store the other day and they had mac and cheese for 68 cents a box and tuna for 40 cents a can. I was like,
There
get
you
in
go.
my cart. You know,
Did
I
you
have six.
make like the casserole, like
I
the
actually haven't yet, but the kids were like, that's a really weird sale to have it together. And I was like, well, let me tell you a secret.
Yes. Let me tell you a story about the 80s.
Right. So now they're like set. They're like, they want it for dinner. And my daughter's like, should I make some homemade breadcrumbs to go on top of it? I was like, oh no, honey, you can't do the homemade. Like, if we're gonna go 80s, we're going full 80s. Like, we're
Yes.
gonna need to get some like cornflakes or something.
Yes. There you go. Oh, nostalgia.
But I feel like, I when we first started this like journey of homesteading and everything, like, and I say we, like the whole society, I
Yeah.
was like, everything in moderation. Well, then I've learned so much and I'm like, I don't even want a little bit of that in my body. But it's like almost a utopian concept to think
Yes.
about like doing it all yourself, actually totally switching over your entire system. I mean, and there's things like my husband and I tease our kids all the time. We're like, you guys eat like you guys are spoiled when it comes to food. And because like even like we were talking about the whole tuna casserole, he's like, you got to put a can of peas with it.
Yes.
Yes. But there's even times where like I don't know, the other night, like we just had no food in the, I mean, we had ingredients, no food in the house, you
Yeah.
know. And I said, hey guys, why don't I just like fry up some sausage patties or something? And they're like, well, what are we gonna have with it? And I was like, I don't know, put it on bread. And they're like, well, don't we need like eggs and like, do you need me to make a loaf of bread? And I'm like, or you could just eat the sausage patties.
There you go.
You are not going to starve. Like, you heat up a bag of popcorn with it.
There you
That
go.
is
That's perfect.
right. It's when they've been so spoiled with all these good foods, and I do a lot of home cooking, and now my daughter, she's like really immersing herself into like everything from scratch. And so then when I actually suggest something like that, they're all like, Mom, I was like, you guys are going to be terrible adults. So what kind of chickens do you raise?
Oh gosh. Well,
What kind of chickens do you not have? What are your dream chickens?
my dream chicken is anything with a naked neck. Like I'm totally
You're like, I
obsessed with
think
like
those are
the
so ugly.
I know, but I also have naked dogs. So
Oh, okay.
I have Xoloitzcuintly dogs. I don't know if you know that breed. It's like Mexican
No.
hairless.
Okay.
Another the Coco dog. And they're little. And then I have a showgirl rooster, so I call him a show boy. And so he's got the naked neck, and I have a naked neck
Okay.
turkin, but I really want like you know, they have bantam naked necks, and then they had like
Really?
now there's a guy where I live that breeds Cerama naked necks, so they're like itty bitty tiny naked neck chickens. I'm like, I need that.
Those little naked necks.
I just love those little naked necks. I don't know what it is.
Although, as long as it's not a, what is it, a naked guinea pig. I saw one of those
Oh,
the
they're
other
so
day.
cute.
Like, I was like, oh my gosh, that's the creepiest thing ever.
I love those and the naked rats. That's my
Oh.
dream. But
Follow the
anyway,
naked.
I rescue a lot of chickens, and I want to say, like, my audience is really a lot of people have their chickens as pets, and then a lot of people have their chickens, and their chickens are performing a job. Like they're there so that they can supply protein for their family, or they're helping them run a business, and maybe they have an egg business. And I respect all of that. Like, my goal is to get as many chickens as possible out of factory farms, not just for the health of the chickens, obviously the health and their welfare, but for human beings as well. Like, we are really putting ourselves in danger
It's a flawed system.
by participating in those kinds of systems.
Yeah.
They're really fragile systems, and they could be very, very dangerous for us, beyond how dangerous for us they are now,
Right. I
just.
mean, the diseases, the chemicals, the
Yeah.
what they do to the environment. And I mean, just recently, what, like 10 plants, Tyson plants or something, shut down in the Missouri area, just putting like thousands of people out of jobs just like that. Because, like you said, it's a fragile system.
Yes. So,
Not that I think that they should continue, but the fact that they can just disappear like that.
yeah, and then what that disappearance does to the food system. I mean, we saw in, I think it was the early winter in 2023, or like the winter of
Oh.
2023, when the price of eggs really skyrocketed.
We had to go to
And
California during that, and I found one of those 5 packs of eggs in like the Silicon Valley for $75.
oh my gosh.
Like, I pay 11 for them here.
Yeah. I really think that's criminal. And one thing that really bothered me during that time is that, and this is going to be another thing I'm really passionate about, is that I was seeing a lot of news articles from fellow educators and people that were really well-meaning, but they were talking about how, well, if you're thinking about raising backyard chickens because of the price of eggs, you really should think again because it's really expensive to raise chickens. And that really bothered me because if you find the poorest people in the world, you will find their chickens. And for millennia, chickens have been a way for us to survive war, famine, poverty, and all the other kind of adverse events that human beings
I
have gone through.
think that there's a whole concept of the like chicken mom where, and
Yes.
you know what, if you like be a chicken mom if you want to, but if you're trying to feed your family, you don't have to be do the chicken mom thing where you're out there feeding them fresh mealworms like constantly. Like, feed them whatever is left over in your kitchen and they're going to provide you with some eggs, you
Yeah,
know?
and that's great. Like I totally, like, I'll say I have bougie chickens, and I'm kind of bougie myself, which is fine. Like, that's my experience. I can afford it. I'm not ashamed of that. What bothers me is when people put roadblocks in front of others and say that this is the only way that you can do it. And it's so interesting to me because at one point, we would look at chicken keeping, and as a society, we would say, oh, that's low class. That's a low class thing. And now it's kind of turned on its head a little bit, and it's like, oh, well, if you have chickens, they have to have this kind of a coop, and they have to have this kind of food, and you can only feed them their feed. You can't give them anything else, even though for millennia they've been eating what we wasted.
I mean,
And so we've
that's
turned,
the kitchen chickens, you know,
yeah.
like,
So
and
we've turned something that was traditionally very sustainable into something that actually uses resources, and that's really from information that comes to us funneled through factory farms. That's why we have those ideas that we have to have these certain things, because it makes money, it makes profit.
well, it's
And
kind of like that, you know, horses used to pull us and now we pull horses.
yeah, yes. And I'm not again, I feed my chickens the best feed you can buy on the market, and it's not cheap, okay? That is where I'm at. I feel like chickens have really saved me. I have experienced a lot of healing in the chicken yard, And so I feel so much gratitude for them that I rescue chickens. Mm-hmm. I basically have a chicken retirement home. They live here until they get to be whatever age, and they're not laying any eggs, or they lay one tiny egg every 6 months or whatever. You know, that is my experience, because I feel like I want to do something for these animals that have enriched my life so much. But that's not everyone's experience, and it's not really what I teach. I don't say, this is, you know, you have to rescue chickens.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feed them a certain food. You have to do all these things. You know, chickens need shelter. They need to be relatively safe, and they need food and water. Yeah. And other than that, they're pretty self-sufficient. You know, yeah. That's really why they've been by our side throughout history. So I just want people to remember that, because I think it's very important, and I want more and more people to have chickens, rather than putting roadblocks in front of them.
I agree. You know, I think we have a little bit more of a commercial homestead. You know, we, like our pigs and our chickens and stuff, we raise them for meat to sell. And then we have like our own stock that's for us. Like, I don't sell eggs unless I happen to have some extra and somebody shows up and asks, you know. But so my laying hens, they have this giant coop, and they get fed like, you know, non-GMO layer. And our neighbor has a maggot farm, so he gives us like the wrong
size.
Yeah, like the wrong size maggots. Our eggs are like, our yolks are like bright orange. They're beautiful. I also, when we butcher a hog, I throw all the bones out there, because they pick all that meat off, and I got eggs all winter, because mm-hmm. I was keeping them in that protein that they needed. Of course, it looks like I murdered somebody in my chicken coop right now, because everything's frozen to the ground and I can't
that
get
that is
off.
A pig bone, right?
Right. Yeah, like, I need to go get a picture of that, like, posted online or something, because it's pretty gnarly.
But I mean, can't even imagine the comments.
Right. Because it's all frozen like into the and then like I put wood chips on top of it so the chickens aren't cold, and there's like bones sticking out of the wood chips. But you know, they're babied, but they're babied in a way that is sustainable for our farm, you know.
Yeah.
Now our meat chickens that I'm raising to put like, you know, 50 in my freezer and sell, you know, 100 to my community or something, they're not getting a lot of scraps and stuff like that, because I don't want that. I want to be like, this is the feed that I feed my chickens from, you know, you can like see the label from the feed store, so on and so forth, you know?
Yeah.
But let's all just admit it. When it's summertime and you open that coop door, who knows what those chickens eat? Yeah. They're eating mice. They're eating bugs. They're eating out of the poo piles. Like, yeah. They're going to be chickens and do chicken things.
Yes, and they're scavengers. That is their, you know, that's their natural state. I will say that the chickens that we have now, most of the chickens that are production breeds in the United States, they have very high nutritional needs, because they've been bred to lay a crazy amount of eggs in really the first 1 or 2 years of life, because most chickens don't live past the second year. They're lucky if they live past the first year. But chickens raised for production usually will have that first year of life, and then they're replaced by other chickens, depending on the operation.
I have like a 6-year-old Buff Orpington, and I still get a brown egg like every couple
yeah.
of weeks. So
I did. Yes.
If she can survive our farm, she can live.
There you go. So, I mean, I will tell people, like, look, there's a best case scenario, okay? It would be great to have your chickens on a base of really high quality chicken feed, definitely supplementing with scraps, because they need fresh nutrients as well. And a lot of chicken feed is processed,
yep.
You know, and then you have your treats that you can give them in small amounts. But that's not like that. That would be great. But I don't want that to be the thing where people say, well, I can't afford to do that, so I'm not going to get chickens. It's like, mm-hmm. If all you can do is feed them scraps and that's all they get, do it. You know, yeah, that's what I will tell people.
I had weevils get into my flour and oats.
They just eat that.
Yeah, my chickens loved it. Like my husband's like, we have to throw out this, all these flowers and oat flour and oats that you bought. And I was like, no, we just don't have to buy chicken feed this month.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
It's got the wheat, it's got the oats, and it's got protein.
Yep. And they'll love it. That's a good enrichment for them as well. Like they're digging through it and full of bugs and everything. That's really good enrichment for them. So
Well, that's
yeah,
another one that
do it.
people don't realize is they need something to do.
Yes.
And like they try to keep them off dirt and everything really super clean, but they need that grit. They need the sand and the rocks and the all that stuff to even be able to digest properly.
Yes. And also, exposure. I do talk a lot about baby chicks, even if you're raising them inside in a brooder, they still need exposure to the outside. So I try and encourage people, if the weather permits, to take your baby chicks outside, keep them safe, stay with them, keep them, where they're not going to run off, or they're not going to get attacked by some cat or something.
Right. I have one of those old baby gate things,
Yeah, there you
like the
go.
circle
But
ones.
yeah, exactly. And a lot of people are really nervous about doing that. And a lot of other educators would be like, no, like you could be exposing them to disease. And what I say is, like, they need that gradual exposure. If you raise a baby, if a mother hen raises baby chicks in the chicken yard, as soon as they're fluffed up, she's going to take them out into that dirt. She's going to show them. She's going to be like, okay, eat this little tiny pebble, eat this bug, eat whatever thing that I think is edible. She's going to be showing them that, and they're going to have that early exposure. And that's really a process that they need to have, so that at 8 weeks, when they're fully feathered, they're not just like suddenly being exposed to their natural environment, and that environment is like adversarial to them because they have not had that exposure. So it's really important for chickens. I really think that they should have access to the grounds. They can peck and scratch and get
Feel the
all
same
that.
way about my kids.
Yeah. Yes. And we know that that's true now. Like there was like if you, those of us that grew up in the 80s, it was like Lysol everywhere. But then we learned, and especially like through the, early 90s and stuff, all those antibiotics and all that antibacterial stuff, we really learned, like, actually, this isn't good. We need constant exposure to the microbiome,
Right.
so that we can build resistance. So I
Like,
would
be
say,
clean, but don't be sanitary.
yes, like keep your coop clean, but not sterile. And again, this is something that like comes through the lens of factory farms. They have to have a sterile environment because their environment is not conducive to life. Those chickens are totally stressed out. They've had no exposure to the outside. They have no enrichment in their life. They're cannibalizing each other. And so it's that we can't really compare what we're doing if you have a backyard flock with what is happening in a factory farm. So,
Well, and I see like the free range thing, and on the farmer side, they don't even go outside. They don't want to. Well, because they don't know to, because they don't have the instinctual things of other birds. Now, from our point of view, we go, I don't want to buy the free range because they don't even go outside.
yeah. And there's a big difference between free range and, when it comes to labeling,
Which is
free
all a joke.
range and pasture. Pasture raised, like that's different.
Yeah.
So
Most labeling is a joke anyways. I was a food safety specialist for 10 years. So, and then people are like, well, didn't you feel good about what you did? I was a really good paperwork pusher, because that's really all it boils down to. So, just totally had a blank.
that's okay. I kind of did too.
I started thinking about an article I read on GMO stuff last night, and it was somebody who I felt like was really an I feel like she's an educated person, and she's like, everything is GMO. It's been genetically modified for thousands of years through selective breeding. And I'm like, no, you just said it. It's selective breeding, and there's totally
Yeah.
different.
Yeah.
Like
not the same thing.
I selective breed all the time by going, I want my sows with that boar instead of that boar.
Yeah.
That is not, you can't even put that on the same page. And I was a little bit like, what am I even reading right now? Because I feel like, you know, she works in the ag industry, so she's going to be biased in that direction. And I was her one at one point, you know, but I still felt like there was like that general reasoning that comes with that. Like, we're actually taught that in college. Like, that's like our vocabulary words, like the difference between selective breeding and non-GMO. And I was like, what am I even reading right now? Like, I was so frustrated. So,
yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that could probably be a whole episode in itself, but
yeah, absolutely.
So what does your chicken operation look like right now? Like, how many do you have? And
oh gosh, how many do I have? 41, I think.
I'm really surprised you knew that number.
I'm pretty sure it's 41 and I have 6 ducks.
Ooh.
But like I said, you know, I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of rescues. I have a lot of special needs chickens. I've got a lot of frizzles and like itty bitty tiny chickens and, that don't do anything but eat treats, lay itty bitty tiny eggs. So yeah, I only
I
have,
quail, so I, yeah. We talk about the itty bitty tiny eggs.
Oh, I love the quail. We used to have a button quail at one point.
Oh.
And I would get those itty bitty tiny eggs and just fry like 12 of them up and give them to my son, who was like 2 or 3 at the time. And he would just eat them like potato chips. Oh. I'd fry them in like coconut oil.
Okay. I'll make a potato salad and then I'll boil them and cut them in half and put them around the edge as like a pretty little garnish.
Fancy. Yeah.
That's about as fancy as I get.
So yeah, I mean, I have a few chickens that are good, you know, good layers, but mostly they're chickens that didn't have anywhere else to go, and so they ended up with me. I just got a new one that somebody went down to a show, a chicken show, because of course there's chicken shows.
Oh yeah.
He went down there, and you know, at the show they had an area where they were selling chickens. And so there, it was just like, you know, this floor where there were a whole bunch of chickens for sale and they were all like fancy chickens. And there was one chicken left after everybody packed up and was going home, and one chicken that nobody wanted. And guess where that chicken is now? She's in Chickenlandia.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I think she's like a meat chicken, but not a, she's not a Cornish cross.
Okay.
She can be dual purpose, but she's big and, you know, with the big legs, nice sturdy legs.
Stomping all
but
over
she
your
also
little
is
naked
a decent
chickens.
Layer. I'm sorry.
Stomping all over your little naked chickens.
Yeah, she's pretty good about it. They're pretty tough.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
The little itty bitty ones.
Besides not wanting people to hear those roadblocks,
mm-hmm.
what other like just getting started advice do you have for someone?
Well, I think what
such
happened,
a broad topic, but
yeah, no, that's okay, because I talk about this a lot, because I think what happens to people is that they get stuck in the research phase. And once you get in there, you could spend years just in that phase, because there's a lot of different educators. There's many people that have different philosophies. And I would say, find somebody that you like. Of course, I'd love it to be me. Of course, you know, take my course. That's what I would tell people. But
yeah.
Really find someone that you resonate with, and someone whose personality you like and everything, and kind of stick with them and don't muddy the waters too much, because you can really, it's like homeschooling. Like when you get, and I've learned this by doing so many homeschooling podcasts and talking to so many people, there's kind of this parallel there, because in homeschool, and from also having my own homeschooling experience with my son, there are these moments where it's like you just get stuck in this research thing, and then you have something come up and you don't know what to do. And so maybe you'll go on like a forum or something, you'll ask a question, and you get like all this different feedback, and it's all different, it's all conflicting. And you're like in this situation where you're like, oh, I don't know what to do. And what I'll tell people in that scenario, because in a chicken flock, there's also everybody's flock is different, and you're going to come up against something that you're not going to be able to find the answer for. You know, you'll find so many answers that you won't know what to do. And in those moments, I tell people, follow your heart. And in fact, in my book, I have like the 6 rules of mindful chicken keeping. And the number one rule is to follow your heart and listen to your instincts. Because just like we've been teaching our children since the beginning of humans, and the institution of school is relatively new, we have been keeping chickens, you know, we have domesticated chickens for millennia, and modern chicken keeping is relatively new. So I just encourage people to call on that part of themselves. It's like, hey, you know what? This is one of the most natural things I can do. I need to listen to my instincts, make a decision, decide, okay, this is what feels right for me. And if you make a mistake, it's okay. You know, that's what life is about.
And you know, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and I was also going to say, especially when kids are involved, you know, it's good. It start in the spring when the weather is good. Okay. For baby chicks and stuff. So, and then make a date, like this is when, between this date and this date, we are going to get baby chicks at some point. And I say make a little window, like a window of time, instead of like on this day, because it's baby chicks, and with live animals, things happen, and you know, maybe they don't hatch at
whether
that time,
you order
or whatever,
them or you have them in the hatchery or whatever. Yeah.
Yes. So, and then your kids can participate in, it's almost like you can have like an advent calendar kind of thing, and they're like getting excited about it. They're doing their research. But it also forces you to be like, okay, this is when we're going to do it. You know, we're jumping on that bandwagon on this date. So that's what I tell people. Don't get stuck in that research phase. Remember, you've been doing this. Yeah. Human beings have been doing this forever. You can do it, make a date, and make it happen.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I'm a little bit more the opposite. I'm like, we're not doing chickens this year, and then we get more chickens. But, you know.
I know.
But, you know, I definitely come from a little bit, you know, a ranching background and that type of stuff. And sometimes my advice comes off as calloused. But when I say don't get in that research phase, just go ahead and get the chickens. There's a chance that you may lose one. I lose chicks every year, and this is my thing. But would you rather lose one or two, like $2 chicks, or be further down the line in your homestead journey and be losing a cow or something like that, that was a $2,000 investment, you know? And sometimes that's where that learning curve comes from, you know, and it's a disappointment, but there's also learning in that disappointment as well.
Yes. And one thing I do tell people, because they're, you know, when you get baby chicks, like, they're really resilient, but also very fragile at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And when mother hen lays her clutch of eggs, she lays a lot of eggs, more than likely will hatch and become adult chickens, because she knows that not all of them are meant to survive. Mm-hmm. So it is not uncommon to lose one or two. And that can be a really tough experience for people, especially if they don't have that farming background and they're just starting out. Like, that's what happened to me. I lost 2 baby chicks the first time I got chickens, and I was just like beside myself about it, you know, because I hadn't really had that exposure, right? You know, but it was a learning experience.
Sometimes. Yeah. Like, you need to hear that it's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It happens. And of course, I have things in my book that you can do to help a baby chick if it's struggling, and things in my course. Like, I'm all about that kind of education.
Oh, yeah.
But I will tell people, like, even if they're only here for a day and they've been cared for, and, you know, their life had their little tiny life had some meaning, that is so much better of an experience than most chickens on the on planet Earth. Absolutely. Most chickens on planet Earth are in factory farms.
Yeah, I agree. So we're almost at the end of our time. I like to ask everybody, what does keep growing mean to you?
Keep growing. When I look in at the chicken yard, I see like a mini society. And I see kind of a reflection of humanity, and I try to use it that way to look at it, to try and understand myself better and to try and understand other people better. So in my life, growth always involves having more compassion and empathy for the people around me. And I hope that never stops. I hope I can keep using this experience to grow as a person and to understand other people better. So that's what it means to me.
I love that. So do you want to tell everyone where they can find you?
Well, like I said, my biggest platform is my YouTube channel. That is Welcome to Chickenlandia. I'm also across all of social media, Instagram, right. Facebook, Twitter. Then I have my podcast, Bawk Talk, BAWKTAWK. That's on all the major podcast apps. And you can find all of this information plus information about my book and my online course on my website. It is welcometochickenlandia.com.
All right. I will make sure that I link all of that. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great.
Did you enjoy today's episode? If so, please head over to your favorite podcast player and leave a comment and review. This helps me to know what you're enjoying and helps others find an episode that can help them. Thank you for joining me today at The Homestead Education, and I hope that I have given you something to think about this week. To help others find me, please comment and leave a review on your favorite podcast player. You can also follow me on Facebook at The Homestead Education and Instagram at homestead_education. Do you have questions that you would like answered or just want to say hi? Please email me at hello@thehomesteadeducation.com. Until next time, keep growing!